As we move into the 4 o'clock hour, it is time for our weekly conversation with the great Brian Scalabrine, NBC Sports Boston, play-by-play color commentary, I should say, for the Boston Celtics TV broadcast. He's brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, perfecting the art of fresh, and findmassmoney.gov. It's fast, it's easy, and it's free. Scal, how are we doing this week?
I'm doing well. You guys?
Doing great. It's good to talk with you. Hopefully your phone holds up a little bit better this week. But let's go ahead and start with what was a unsuspecting win against the Milwaukee Bucks. Peyton Pritchard must have got off the bus hitting threes because he was drilling them from the logo basically all throughout the game from the first quarter on. He ends up with 28 points off the bench and just adds another dimension to this relentless Boston Celtics offensive attack on a night where Jason Tatum didn't really have it going. I know we're only four games into the season, Scal, but where do you see this team's ceiling right now?
You know, I think it's amazing that, you know, I've been on teams where a coach can get the most out of some and then not necessarily the most out of all. But think about, like, Sam Hauser's out. There's some opportunities to knock down shots, and Peyton Pritchard steps up and fills that role. I would have to say, like, looking at all the players that we have, you know, he's got Tatum and Brown making sacrifices last year trying to move the ball, and he got everybody else playing as, like, the best ball of their career. And I feel like a lot of that is, you know, the players, you know, getting those opportunities, stepping up, working hard every single day. But it's also the empowering mindset of Joe Mazzulla, and give credit to the assistant coaches who are there every day putting in the work with the guys. So I think when you see a Peyton Pritchard do that, it's a cumulative effect of, you know, all hands on deck. And, you know, Peyton Pritchard a couple of years ago wasn't playing, but he was putting in that work every single day. And they're starting to see the results of all of that.
Scal, I made a couple comparisons for Pritchard. We've gone through the Julian Edelman evolution, and I know you know all about him since you were on his podcast recently. But in the beginning, Julian Edelman was just like this scrappy kid. Oh, we're going to find a role for him. Or even Brad Marchand with the Bruins. Like, oh, he's a pain in the ass. He does all these things that pisses off other teams. And both those guys at some point became Pro Bowl, all-star, like elite athlete-type players for their teams. Does Peyton Pritchard have that upside? Is he a guy that at some point when he gets the right opportunity, we're just going to realize, no, he's not scrappy, he's not a role player, he's not a bench player, he's a good basketball player?
Yeah, I mean, there's some things, like when you're talking about all-star, all-NBA, you know, like dominant levels, you know, there's like a few things. Like his finishing game can improve a little bit at the rim. Like to be a Like, when you're, like, those type of players, not to, like, spark up bad memories in Boston, but you ever see Kyrie go to the basket and, you know, the plethora of finishes that he has? When you're an undersized guard, you have to have all those. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying he doesn't have all those. We're just not seeing a lot of that. And for him to get to that level, he would have to do that. But also, you would have to give him the opportunity to do that. And every time he plays, and every time he plays big minutes with big responsibility, he usually plays really well. So, yes, I think the answer to your question, he's more than just a scrappy guy that works hard. I think he's super talented. He's tough as nails. You know, he got the respect of his teammates. And I think there is a ceiling for him, and we haven't seen it yet. But I would just say from my point of view, for him to crack that level, he would have to become an elite finisher around the rim to get to that level. But I don't put anything past him. If one day he wants to become an elite finisher and focus on doing that, I think he could do it.
Celtics are in Indiana tonight taking on the Pacers. Scal, I think we all sort of agree that the Celtics are the most talented team out there, and they did sweep the Pacers in the playoffs, but a bunch of those games were really close. Are there any teams in the East that you think may, despite not being as talented, could provide matchup problems for the Celtics in the regular season at the very least going forward here?
Yeah, I mean, you got a target on your back every night. I think Indiana's going to play hard tonight. I think the game is going to be really good and really close. Orlando would be another team like that. You saw just Vancaro had 50 the other night, what they're capable of doing. They're shooting the ball a lot better this year than they did in the past. They were a good team, couldn't make shots at a high enough level. Now they are. So that's a team that I find maybe a little scary. I thought the Bucks on a back-to-back played really well. They were terrible. They were terrible against the Nets, but maybe I wasn't giving the Nets enough credit. Like, they played really well against the Nuggets last night as well. So, but I think Milwaukee could be, you know, there could be some tough regular season games with those teams. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of teams. And just the cumulative effect of the schedule could sometimes come back to bite the Celtics. But I think that they're looking at this, and it's really early. but they're looking at this to be like an all-time great season. And I thought Doc Rivers like said it perfectly the other night. The championship unlocked the Celtics, and I think that's exactly what happened. They're all playing at an elite level. They're playing at the finals level to start this season. So where does that mean for them, and where can they grow from there?
I don't believe we've gotten a chance to ask you this, but there's this idea that the whole Olympic experience or non-experience for Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum and that whole thing is going to motivate this team, or at least your two star players, even more. Do you think that that will actually provide any sort of motivation for them this season?
You know, NBA players, did you watch The Last Dance and you see how Michael Jordan just makes up stuff in his head to be motivated? Yeah. And I'm sure Tom Brady's like that. I'm
Absolutely.
Sure all athletes are kind of like that. We're talking about a margin, 1%. 1% makes a massive difference.
Yep.
So if they are motivated in an individual workout through the months of August and September based off of that, and it's just a little bit more, it makes a massive difference at the highest level. So the answer is yes. I think they are motivated by that. But do I think they have a picture of Steve Kerr and Grant Hill on their mirror looking at it every day? No, I don't think that. But I do think that athletes do search for adversity, and they search for motivation, and it wasn't hard to find it for these two guys who have accomplished a lot.
Is Jason Tatum a legit MVP candidate this season? Like, is in top three, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that has a lot to do with what the Celtics do. 68, probably not. 70? You got to really think about it. Are you really going to not give a guy an MVP if their team wins 70 games? So there's a lot that factors into that. You know, like we keep bringing up, like, I don't know how good Denver's going to be, but if you look at Nikola Jokic on court, off court, like they're like a lottery team with him off the court and a championship level team with him on the court. So there's things like that that come into play. I think writers who vote are more sophisticated now than they were in the past, where they just gave it to the best player from the best team. But I think it has to be like an overwhelming success of the team, and Tatum so far continuing the numbers that he has, plays a lot. You know, he's going to probably have games where he sits in fourth quarters because we're blowing teams out. So there's a lot that goes into it, but I don't think that 65, 66, 67 wins would get it done. I think it has to be like in a remarkable record to get it done.
Doesn't politics play into it too sometimes? Because you know that those writers who are sophisticated, I agree with you, but they didn't want to give it to Jokic three straight years with no championships. So Embiid got it that one year. Giannis got it his one year. I think like Luka hasn't won an MVP yet, so he might be the next one up.
Yeah.
Like, doesn't that next one up thing, there's fatigue in the MVP voting, isn't there?
There's a little bit of voter fatigue. You know, there's also, you know, they're like, it's like they use the advanced analytics to justify their pick, right? To say, you know, what is, and then sometimes when the advanced analytics all point to one guy, they'll take the record to make it, you know. So I think you're right. Like, it would seem odd for Jokic to get another one if Denver is the fourth seed right now in the Western Conference. But SGA is in that conversation, so what's their record? I think SGA and Jason Tatum like fall in their same category. Everyone recognizes their team is really, really good. So for those guys, it's probably best record at that point. And Tatum's always been a big plus-minus guy. Like, ever since he was like his first year in the league, he's been a plus-minus guy. So I do think there's voter fatigue, and I do think there's advanced analytics to support any argument.
So I'm sure you've heard the discussion about rules changes. Maybe you've even taken part the Nick Wright thing. We should get rid of threes and they're bad. Any thoughts on some of those topics, including the idea that I think he brought up and I actually brought up here earlier in the week? What if you made dunks worth 3 points as well to sort of balance out the court and the value of points?
Yeah, but I think he doesn't understand the concept of it. Like, the reason why the Celtics shoot well from two at the rim is because of the threes. You ever want to play offense? Like, go find out why, like, you can't play offense with Ben Simmons out there because he can't spread the floor. So everybody says, like, it's a much more beautiful game when everybody is accounted for. It creates rotation. It creates driving gaps. It opens up the floor. And I like, offensive ratings are off the charts right now because the coaches are sophisticated. They go out and they get players that could shoot. It's a massive advantage to have an Al Horford and a Porzingis out there that can defend at a high level and take away threes. I disagree with anybody saying I don't like the game anymore. If they say they don't like the game, then they're trying to like appease a player or a team that they particularly like. And they've now realized that their team has no shot of beating the Boston Celtics. So you go ask any coach out there, any GM, you know, coaches in college. I have kids on my AAU team that struggle shooting, and the coach will not give them a scholarship because of it. So everybody has adapted to shooting the basketball, and I don't want to hear about rule changes. This is a beautiful game right now, especially because I think since Joe Dumars has taken over, the physicality has went way up, which is much better than it was 4 or 5 years ago. Right now, the game is at its best. We have physical play. They allow stuff to go. And then you have the great, you know, talent of these offensive players. I don't want to hear anybody with about old school 80s basketball is better. That's just not right.
But do you think there are enough shooters to go around? Because not everybody can be the Boston Celtics and shoot 56% threes and hit as many as they can and just blow people away. You see it sometimes in the NCAA tournament where teams get hot one game, they have the upset, and then that same team goes, you know, 2 of 30 to start the next game, and their run is over. Are there enough shooters to go around to play this style of basketball as widely as it's being played?
Well, I know Sam Hauser was undrafted. I know Peyton Pritchard was a late pick. You know, I know a lot of guys that, you know, people didn't value. Derek White was a late pick. So how about they take their time in getting the right guys, and then when they do get the right guys, how about they take the time to develop it? You know, like we, at the very beginning of Joe Mazzulla's tenure here, everyone was down on the threes. Joe Mazzulla sat at the end of the plane with me and explained to me why we want to do this. It made no sense at the time to me until last year and then this year, and they're blowing everybody away because of the threes that they took a couple years ago. So maybe a lot of these coaches, GMs, they can't make that full-time commitment, where maybe it doesn't look good at the beginning, but heck, it'll eventually look good a couple years down the road if you can buy into that sort of style. So I'm not going to penalize the Boston Celtics or when the Golden State Warriors made their run for being different. That's what we want from sports, to continue to evolve, and that's what they're doing right now. So the rest of the team should be forced to catch up, and they will. The rest of the NBA will catch up as fast as they can. But right now, we thought the league was going to be closer. We thought the Celtics gap wasn't going to be as big as it was last year. We're coming to find out at this point in time. It's early, I get it, but it might be even bigger than it was last year.
All right, Scal, before we let you go, Shams was on with Pat McAfee today, said that the Celtics are targeting December for Porzingis to return. Is that around what you're the same thing you're hearing? And what kind of impact do you think he's going to have after being out for the first 2 months of the season? Is he going to just slot right back in like no big deal, or how do you think that's going to go?
Yeah, I mean, I don't. I'm hearing December as well. I've heard later December, like Christmas, but okay. Every time you see him, he looks good out there. But what I will say about that is I think it's going to be a long process to bring him back. And why rush him? And I think Porzingis should play a lot. I just don't think he should play a lot of minutes, if that makes sense. Like, you should play as many games as you possibly can, maybe sit out of back-to-backs. But there's nothing wrong with playing like 18 to 22 minutes, just getting him out there, getting him acclimated. Remember, you have to build up your stamina to get ready for the playoffs, because that's like a whole nother level. So just being on ice all year or playing half speed does not help him to get ready for the playoffs. So if he comes back, when they bring him back, I think he'll play hard. I don't think he'll miss a beat, but I don't think we'll see him playing like 33, 34 minutes.
All right. Well, there you go. Big Christmas present for Celtics fans out there. Scal, thanks so much. We'll enjoy the call of the game tonight with Indiana. We'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds good. See you.
Thanks, Scal. All right. It's Brian Scalabrine joining us here on WEEI Afternoons. We're going to take a quick break. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Stiz is going to get you caught up on what's trending. And when we come back, what is wrong with your Boston Bruins? We'll discuss next.